Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're here to talk about the offensive tackles in the 2024 draft. Continue our draft countdown series, and tonight we have Chris Aguilera as our guest. Chris, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Ken. Appreciate it.
Always a pleasure. Chris of the Deep Cover Pod, a longtime friend of the show, Michael Crawford, his partner there, along with, I'm forgetting somebody else who's on the show.
Kerry Stevenson.
Kerry Stevenson, of course. Still been looking to have Kerry on the show, by the way. Pass that message along to him if you would for me. I'd love to have him back here. But Ravens come into the 2024 draft having dug themselves in a pretty deep hole at left tackle, or at offensive tackle in general, but at left tackle in particular, with the pay reduction and contract shortening for Ronnie Stanley.
Yeah, it's and then also not even just that, but also with Morgan Moses, the Morgan Moses trade, which caught some people by surprise, caught me by surprise. I didn't think they were going to come into the season with all, you know, you already have the two guard spots open and now you have a right tackle spot open. So coming into the season, well, into draft season with three open holes, it seems like it's less than ideal. So let's see. I mean, they have a plan in place. So we're going to see on draft night what that plan is.
Yeah, it's I very much expect to see two or three offensive linemen drafted this year. Barriers to entry at tackle in particular are enormously high. What I mean by that, you either have to pay a lot in terms of cap dollars to go sign someone on the free agency, or you have to pay a tremendous amount of draft capital where there just aren't any offensive tackles that go undrafted, and there aren't very many. There's a terrific overhang of jobs to players who can play that position, particularly on that left side.
Yeah, I mean, like they say, you got to pay to play. And, you know, those are the positions, premium positions, where you see it most in the preseason, where that first unit goes out and that second unit comes in, and whoever the backup quarterback is just usually running for their lives. So it's a deep position for this draft class, but it's also very important in the NFL because there's not a lot of them who play at a very high level.
Want to get your opinion on this as well, Chris, but at left tackle in particular, I think that's where the Ravens' focus needs to be in the 24 draft, even though that position is filled theoretically through this year. Now, we all know Ronnie Stanley's going to miss some time because he always does. But it was obvious, I think, to anybody who's watching that with a $20 million cap savings, Ronnie Stanley was not going to play for the Ravens in 2025. But now it's been basically secured by the fact that his salary was cut and that year was cut off his contract. To me, they have to address left tackle in this draft because of the combination of the number of players that are available, need to potentially have a ramp-up year for a developmental player. And I think they need to be entirely focused on left tackle traits, left tackle body type, and left tackle feet in particular in this draft.
Yeah, 100%. This isn't a scheme where you could hide players kind of like they did with Orlando Brown and with a Greg Roman scheme, where it's more downhill. You're more just trying to be road graders. And, you know, in Monken's offense, he's leaving guys on an island one-on-one. and when it comes to pass blocking. So the feet, that's the most important part for me. I want to see guys who can move, who can get out in space and really be able to mirror and match these defenders.
Talk about the current backups, McCary and Falele. To me, McCary has been a guy who's been a perfectly respectable backup and a perfectly not the guy I want in there as a starting left tackle for any period of time.
Yeah, I think if he is in there, you want him at right tackle. I think he's shown that. Obviously he's dealt with some injuries, but when he has been healthy, he's played right tackle at a pretty good level. But do you want to go into the season with him penciled in as your right tackle? I'm not too sure, because he's not a guy who's been able to stay healthy for the last 2-3 seasons now, which is the problem that we have on the left side too.
Daniel Fa'alele has still a big problem using his arms. He almost treats them as vestigial organs. There is a tiny amount of that in this draft that we'll talk about, but it's one of the things that really frustrates me when an extremely big man cannot attempt to strike in pass blocking to try and gain an advantage. It's the way to generally to disrupt a pass rush plan is to make sure you put a big paw into the chest plate or the armpit of that opposing edge rusher, and Falele has not yet mastered that. Now, that said, he did play better down the stretch, and when I say better, I'll give you my scoring system. He had a .46 lifetime scoring per play, and he was up to .71 in his last 94 blocks. Now, that's not many plays, not many scored blocks to really hang your hat on, but he did play better for about the last four games of last season.
Yeah, and, you always hear fans like, oh, we can't depend on a guy like Falele, but it's, these guys, they get paid to coach these players up. You know, Joe D is one of the best offensive line coaches in the league, and we've seen it with Ben Powers. Hopefully we'll see it this year with Ben Cleveland. Mm-hmm. And, Daniel Falele, he has the athletic skills. With him, it's just about being in shape. And like you said, being able to use his hands and that length, and be able to maximize those traits that everybody can, clearly see on tape.
Yeah, would be great if he suddenly turned the corner or continued. I will say the last 100 or so snaps he played. Josh Jones picked up, for a mid-range contract this offseason, a guy who has some experience at guard, some at tackle. Actually played the first game of the last season against the Ravens at guard with the Texans. A fairly young free agent. I believe he's 26. And so oftentimes the tackles are some of the older player groups in the draft. So it's a little unusual to get a 26-year-old free agent tackle who has any time at left tackle. But I think he might be first up as a replacement tackle this year. We'll see. I think it would still be McCary on the left side. But I think if it were on the right side, I think it might be Josh Jones replacing Fa'alele or the draft pick. If it comes to that. But what's it, any feelings about Josh Jones and how he can deliver for the 24 Ravens?
Yeah, so the limited snaps that I saw of him on the right side, I do not want him there. He was awful, especially in the Ravens game. The Ravens, each pass rusher was taking turns just beating him up on the right side. And I actually read an article when he was with Arizona, and he was saying how he's comfortable, much more comfortable playing on the left side than he is on the right. So I may have that same problem with Ben Cleveland, where he's more comfortable on the right than the left. It might be the opposite with Jones. So he might be a guy who could be in the mix for a left guard or maybe the backup left tackle spot. But at right tackle, it was an adventure.
All right. Well, Arizona gave up on him after three seasons. Arizona probably has the single worst track record of left tackle play in the last 25 years in the National Football League. And they completely gave up on him after three seasons. And they've had a bunch of guys, Bobby Massey, and be like a prototype for their left tackle position. Their best left tackle last 25 years is probably Jared Veldheer, who's, a journeyman with Oakland and him, but played about 4 years with the Cardinals. But I think it says a lot that they give up on a player like Jones, and he then spent his fourth season with the Texans before becoming a free agent.
Yeah.
All right. Well, one of the reasons I don't think that the Ravens can defer the left tackle replacement until the 25 draft is because they draft in the 20s. They may draft in the 20s next year. They draft a 30 this year, obviously. But the left tackle is a very difficult place to find a player in the 20s in a normal draft. You can oftentimes there's two, three guys that stand out over the entire field. We had that a few years ago with the with Cross and the other two guys being head and shoulders above the other left tackles. This year, you know, bumper crop of left tackles or bumper crop of tackles, let's put it that way. But I think it would be very, it would be a big gamble if they waited until 2025 to address left tackle.
Yeah, and I agree. And it's also when you take a look at this class, I think this could be a historic offensive tackle class, period. I think, you know, there could be maybe 10 guys, maybe even 12 taken in the first two rounds. Mm-hmm. That's how highly I think of this class. And, you know, it's why wait? You know, you never know what's going to happen next year, like you said. And you have this great class coming in. And if you can get a guy in your building, because it's not like you're just going to draft him and he's going to sit all year. Like you said, to open, Ronnie's going to be hurt at some point. So this guy is going to be your backup. So not only is he going to be, you know, called in to take over in case Ronnie gets hurt, but he's going to be the guy for the future. So why wait to get that guy for such an important role? Because you know you're going to need him at some point in the 2024 season.
Yeah. Yeah. And it could be an extended period, in fact, in the 2024 season. And you want to be ready to play. I do think the ramp up period the Ravens have is actually an advantage they have drafting. We'll talk a little bit about that. But I'd like to also hear, you know, I asked you to prepare a top 10 list so we could count this down, but talk a little bit about how you put your list together in terms of, did you do it for the league as a whole? Did you do it for the Ravens only? And who did you maybe exclude? Because there are certainly players who play tackle in college who aren't going to play tackle in the pros.
So when I first start watching it, I just watch it just with no Ravens lens. Then when I start formulating the list, that's when I put the Ravens glasses on and I say, okay, this guy can work in this offense. This guy could work at this spot for the Ravens. When it comes to the positional versatility, that's where it gets a little tricky because you have guys who are clearly first round picks if they're moved inside. But then also there are guys who they could play tackle in the league, which is something that we've seen quite a few times with the Ravens where, you know, they have a guy like Makari, for example, who's primarily an inside player and they had no choice but to play him on the outside. Now, he was a left tackle his whole career at Cal. So there are situations like that where we kind of have to keep those lenses on because we've seen so many injuries happen on the Ravens offensive line that we kind of have to look at it like that, where the positional versatility is also seen as a plus for the Ravens.
I do see it as a plus. I so want the Ravens to figure out the left tackle problem with left tackle traits that I don't want a swing man, you know, and there are a couple guys in this draft who definitely fit that role as they'd be much better off inside. I specifically excluded Graham Barton from my list here. I put him in, ranked him with the interior offensive line guys. All the other tackles I left on this list, including one other notable one that I don't think is going to make it as a tackle in the NFL. I think he's more likely to play guard. But as we go through this, maybe we'll do that. Is there anybody you excluded from your list?
No, I actually have Graham Barton on mine.
Okay. All right. Well, fair enough. We'll talk about him and that'll be fun. Why don't we go ahead and kick it off right now and go in with your number 10 guy.
My number 10 guy is Roger Rosengarten from Washington. He's a guy, you know, raw traits. He has the physical build. When you talk about a lean, tall, athletic player, I think he has the movement skills that, you know, you can't teach those movement skills. You can teach technique, you can teach hand fighting, but the movement skills, the ability to match and mirror edge defenders, that's something that you cannot teach. You can get a little bit better at, but you either have that athleticism, you either have those feet or you don't. And for me, he has those feet. And something that I actually found out about him late in the process was he was a left tackle his whole career, high school career, and in his first 2 years at Washington. Then when Michael Penix came in, Michael Penix is a lefty. They moved Rosengarten to the right side to be his blind side protector. So that's somebody who has positional versatility. Now, he didn't play left tackle in any meaningful games, but the fact that he has that positional versatility, we know that that's in his, you know, in his toolbox. I thought he was a guy. He, as far as the athletic skills, I already spoke about that. Now, the negatives with him, he has a little bit of trouble dealing with bull rushing. You know, he's leaner than you would like. He doesn't have that grown man body yet. You can still see he has a lot more to add on to his frame, and he's not there quite yet. But he reminded me a lot of Brian O'Neill, who was a tackle from the Vikings. Another guy who was lean, able to put on some mass, and then we see him, he's one of the best tackles in the league now. So I think they're along that same kind of spectrum. And he was a guy that I really, really enjoyed watching.
All right. I'll make a few comments about Rosengarten. I like him too. Clearly a developmental player. He's at least a year away from being able to play left tackle in the NFL. Most of it is frame related. The anchor is not at all what you would want. He's a die slowly left tackle. But I looked at that and I did think that is something that Ronnie has dealt with. Sorry, that Lamar has dealt with and dealt well with Ronnie the last few years, is having a left tackle who dies slowly and is a good mirrorer and still keeps the hands of the player off him. Generally speaking, he might get bumped, but he generally keeps the hands of the defense end or the edge rusher off of Lamar. So I do have him on my honorable mention list. It would be the number. I know he had some guys excluded from this too, but for me, he would be number 13 on the list for me. I think he's a fifth or sixth round pick. I think they get him later. What do you think about what round he would go?
I think he's going to go in second or third.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's too rich for me.
Yeah. I think when you put in the physical ability that he has, and you know, when you talk about core strength and that's building onto that frame, I feel like coaches are going to see that and they're going to say, we can work with that. You know, we can add to that. It's those rare movement skills. That's the part that's difficult to get. And I think they're going to fall in love with that. And especially, like I said, with that right and left side ability, if somebody could come in, play right tackle, then in a pinch play left tackle, I think coaches are going to really like that.
Rosengarten has kind of marginal arm length for the position. And we say this year. I mean, a few years ago, we didn't have a whole lot of left tackles. And the year that Tevin Jenkins was thought of being as a right tackle and being long enough at maybe 33 inches, and there were a bunch of other guys who were like 33, 33 and a quarter. This year, there's a whole bunch of 34 and a half and up. I mean, some incredibly long tackles. Rosengarten's at 33 and a half, so he's on the margin. Body size, you know, the body type being the other thing, but we both agree that Rosengarten would be an interesting player to develop. I think that I would just have a lower price tag on him, which is, I think, what a lot of this comes down to in the end is how the Ravens view pricing there. But let's go ahead. I'll jump ahead and go to my number 10 guy, unless you have anything else to say about Rosengarten.
No, we go ahead.
Okay. So Patrick Paul of Houston is my number 10 guy. There's a lot to like in terms of the physical traits. A very good overall athlete, 6'8", 331, 36 and a quarter inch arms, a 5'13", 40, solid vert. Did the three cone. No, I mean, what left tackle does the three cone? Maybe he's fine in the three cone. 24 in November. Very good overall athlete. You watch him on tape, it immediately shows up. And I was watching him after a couple of the quicker guys. He's very heavy-footed. So even though he's played left tackle at Houston, I think it's going to be very hard for him to stick at left tackle as a pro. He's regularly cited also for slow hands. I thought those were generally okay. He has very long arms. He typically is able to get his hands on the rusher and slow them down and oftentimes get them disrupted in that way, which I liked about him. It's definitely something he has, and a player like Fa'alele does not. Excelled as a pass blocker, did a really good job with that, mostly with the length and a good bull rush anchor. And of course, if you're 6'8", 331, you're probably going to have a pretty good bull rush anchor. Played, I would say, without a tip-top mirror. You know, you want that guy who can dance like a bear opposite the defensive end. He's really not that guy. He makes use of his length to get by in the pocket a lot, but he wasn't bad at that. Elements of hand play, set and reaction. They said they improved between 22 and 23. And I didn't watch any of his 22 tape, but I think the first assertion that they were improved is evident in, first of all, in the number of penalties. I also don't want to talk about it, the game, the cutoff versus Georgia Tech and some of the things I saw, but the reduction in penalties is very good. So we had one penalty every 95.2 snaps in 23, which is about 100% of what John Simpson had in his career. And one every 259.3 in 2023, cut himself, I think, to three penalties for the season. So that's always nice to see. Watch a cut-up versus Texas Tech. By the way, a lot of cut-ups seem to involve Texas Tech this year, which is great because you get to, you know the defenders well. You know, you get to see Edgerrin Cooper a lot and players like that. The whole bunch of things I think were very good in that game and some bad, but the grip strength was something that really shows up. Is he's inside the frame of players and holding on very well. He got long arms and good grip strength. That's a great freaking combination. He talked about making use of length. I thought he did a very good job working his man to 6 o'clock. I talked about 12 to 6 blocking, meaning he blocks him around kind of the arc of the pocket and past that back pylon where the quarterback is not going to be bothered anymore. Doesn't necessarily even have to release the guy, but he often does. And that was just very effective for him. I thought in that game, PFF and their pressure numbers, I don't completely agree with. We're going to talk about one other instance of this, but they missed a pressure at about 137 on the cutoff. If you're just looking at it time-wise, where he failed to pick up a stunt handoff that flushed Donovan Smith. Otherwise, one thing I really like is he's not a slow death guy. He maintains the pocket size. So after seeing Ronnie allow the pocket to be compressed the last couple of years, before he played well at the end of this last year, I thought having a guy who keeps a wide pocket and will give Lamar more room to move around, and if somebody does get through to pressure, is of great value. So I like that. He took an illegal hands to the face, but didn't go flagged, and he still maintained his block on the play, got away with a hold himself. Really interesting project, because I think he'll be drafted late in round two or in round three, where the draft capital expended does not really demand a left tackle prospect. So I hope that that would be a place where the Ravens would get him. If it doesn't work out and he's fine at right tackle, spending your last pick of the second round doesn't seem so bad. Now, missing the opportunity to get a left tackle in this draft, it would be bad. But spending that amount of capital on a right tackle, I think would be okay if that's where he ended up. So they've got this one-year ramp-up period. If you want a perfect player for that in terms of a guy who has a lot of upside, I think Patrick Paul might be one of your guys.
Yeah, Paul came in as one of my honorable mentions. He was just 12. Mm-hmm. But people hear those numbers and they're like, oh, you don't like him. But it's like, no, it's this class is so good.
Yeah.
Where you have guys that you're like, damn, I got to leave him out of my top 10. And, you know, I love Patrick Paul. I think he's fantastic. But, you know, he's a guy I think the Ravens would love. A two-time captain. We know the Ravens love that. You hit on the size. I think he uses his length very well. He has strong hands. I just wish his hands were more accurate. There were times where his hands would just be on the outside shoulder instead of on inside the breastplate. And if he can just clean that up, like, I think he can really develop into a really nice left tackle, because he's so massive to get around, and he has good athleticism that you can't just run around him. Say he can be one of those guys that's patient, where he hits his mark, he knows where his quarterback's going to be, and he has the length and the athleticism to recover if you try to hit him with an inside move. And if you're trying to go outside, he has the length where he can just run you right around that arc. So I was a big fan of his.
All right. Outstanding. Take us to number nine.
My number nine guy was Kingsley Suamatia, BYU tackle, 6'5", 325, former five-star recruit for Oregon. He's actually the cousin of Penny and Noah Sewell, Sewell cousins, Sewell brothers, sorry. He's a guy, you know, transferred to BYU, played right tackle in 2022 for them, and then switched over to the left side this past season in 2023. And, you know, he's an incredibly raw tackle right now, but the tools, that's the tantalizing part with him, the tools that he has. If he goes back to school for this season, could be talking about a top 15, top 20 pick if he goes back to school. For whatever reason, he made the decision to come out this year, and now we're talking about back end of the first round, maybe second round. But he has a he's a guy that I think once things start slowing down for him mentally, I think you will really start to see him take off as a player, because he has the movement skills. It's just right now, his ability to process stunts and just those exotic schemes, he has a really hard time picking that up right now. And I think he's a guy that he would most likely have to be redshirted his first year. But I think that there's a diamond in the rough there with his play skills, because he has the hip flexibility. He has the length. He has the knee bend. And that's what you want from somebody that's this big and this powerful. Now, in the run game, it was a little shaky in the run game with him. And you don't expect to see that with somebody that's so big like him. In the run game, he didn't really displace people like the way that you would like him to. He has a little bit of nasty to him, but that was more like after the whistle stuff. It wasn't really like there are players who we'll talk about later on in this where they're displacing guys at the snap of the whistle. And with Kingsley, he didn't really do it that much for a guy that's his size. So I wish we would have saw that more. But again, this is only his second full season as a starter, and he's one of the youngest prospects in this class. So, you know, like I said, I think this is a guy who could be a diamond in the rough in the late first, second round.
Love him. Also, I have him at number 8, so we're right in lockstep here. 6'5", 326, 34 1/4-inch arms. Now, I'm not just saying that for the old arm length thing, because the Ravens do love their arm length. They're going to draft long arms whenever they can get them. But he had 31 bench reps at 34 1/4-inch arms, and at age 21. There just are not many athletes that have their grown man strength developed at age 21. Even bigger guys like tackles, you know, they often don't bench, and that's a good indication they're gonna put up about 20 reps because they're just not great. But anyway, 34 1/4 inches for 31 bench reps is an unbelievable point on that efficiency curve there of strength and length. So you have that outstanding athletic and length profile, strength profile to start with. But he was moved from right tackle to left tackle in 2023. I think that probably contributed in part how raw he still looked moving to left side. It is a different set of responsibilities and a little bit different skill set. It's definitely a different shoulder you're working with as your primary, where you're trying to protect. I watched a cut up again of the Texas Tech game. It was his worst game overall, if you're looking at a PFF score, and his second worst as a pass blocker in 2023. And yet there were still a lot of nice things to see. By the way, I don't know about you. When I'm looking at a cut up, I like to look at not the guy's best game. I want to look at something's in the middle, or if it's a bad game, that's usually okay too, because some of the bad habits will show up on tape and you get to see it. You're already bombarded with these highlight tapes that are pretty much useless for evaluation purposes, because you're only seeing the best handpicked plays. Mm. So the only time I really find myself using pure highlight tapes is when I want to see something like, what did all this player's interceptions have in common? How did did he undercut the ball? Did he lay back like a center fielder? You know, if I want to know that, sure, I'll watch highlight tapes. I wish somebody would put together low light tapes. Give me all the drops for some receiver. You know, give me all the missed blocks or all the pressures allowed by a pass rusher, so I can really evaluate that in a different way.
I'm sure those are out there somewhere.
I've looked. I haven't seen them. But talking a little bit about that Texas game, he did allow a quarterback hit to Steve Linton, who is an edge who might be drafted in round 5 or 6 this year. Slipped off a bull rush, so that was unfortunate. You know, he could I think what I did see in this game was a lot of good spatial and time awareness. So he doesn't give a lot of ground to mirror. So he's really trying to conserve space. And he also knows how long he needs to block on a play, which is, you know, talking about some of the rawness and whatnot. It's a little – linemen need to have an internal clock too. They need to know, particularly when they're blocking 12 to 6, they need to know, you know, how long do they have to maintain that? Do they have a chance to make it work? They have to kind of have to remember what the play is in relation to that, to know if there's a slower developing play involved or if the ball's already going to be out. But I thought he was pretty good anyway in that. Did get beaten inside again. I didn't look up the guy's number, but it was a spin move by number 7 for Texas Tech for the pressure there. The mirror is a question that I think basically is a case of rawness. He certainly tries to play that way, doesn't give ground when he can, but I think it's still something that will improve. He stands up a little bit, and he swipes more than punches with his arms is something I noticed. Do you notice him going to the breastplate and going to the armpit a lot with his punch?
Yeah, to me, he was a guy who's just relying on pure power more than technique. He's just a brute right now, and you expect that with a player that's so young. You know, you learn those tricks of the trade as you get more reps, as you have more of that game experience. And to me, he was just trying to rely more on brute strength than actual technique and refinement.
I agree with you, and I kind of look at that and say, is that an advantage? Because there's some polished players in this game. There's one really polished edge rusher in Leatu Latu, who I'm lower on than other people because he's so polished. He's exactly where to put his arms. He's 3 years ahead of everybody else who's playing right tackle against him. He generally lines up or often lines up on that side. And it looks like the right tackles are just flailing their arms at him because he knows exactly where to put his arms. You know, that kind of polish would actually worry me coming to the pros. I wonder how much of a ceiling a player like that has relative to say, Verse or Turner in terms of that first round. But in this case, with Suamataia, I think that the lack of polish is a real positive. And whether you're talking about the run or some of these other pass blocking things that he do that are not up to the NFL standard right now, the Ravens would be the place to come if he wants to fix those. It's not like he has a choice in the matter, but I think the Ravens have a very good developmental process.
Yeah, that's the advantage of having someone who has a history like Joe D. You have a fantastic offensive line coach who has a resume of being able to bring along these raw developmental guys, and he's been able to.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Develop players who don't even have this kind of athletic profile. So imagine giving them a raw piece of clay like this to mold into a really, really refined hyper athlete like Kingsley is.
That's a great point. I mean, if you can make McCary into a left tackle, if you can make Ricky Wagner, who's kind of a short arm guy, into a right tackle, if you can get what he got out of players like Skura and Jensen.
After seeing what he did with Bozeman, he can probably turn water into wine after what he did with Bozeman, because I was not a fan of Bozeman coming out of Alabama.
Yeah, well, not known as an athlete, and he became the most prolific puller in Ravens history. And he and Hurst, they are the poster child for Dallas Sanders being able to teach anybody to pull. I mean, those guys, they pulled a ton in their Ravens time at left guard. And there's no evidence. There was no evidence at all prior to that they'd be able to do that.
No, not at all. I remember watching Bozeman, and he might as well just lay on the floor when the ball was snapped, because he was just always on the floor at Alabama. And the way that he was able to turn him into a puller and actually, you know, have him get a second contract, it blew my mind, because I thought he was going to be gone.
So Suamataia, it sounds like we'd both be happy with it, with the Ravens getting him. Would you be okay with him at 30, or would you want the Ravens to trade down and get him between, say, 35 and 45, if that was even at some risk to not getting him?
Yeah, that's what I struggle with the pick 30. I struggle with that. And talent-wise, I would say yes. For the trade down option, I would say yes to it, talent wise. But the situation that they're in, the ceiling that he can possibly have, the other teams that need tackles, you know, you're playing a dangerous game. Yep. There. It depends who's left on the board. Is he the last one of those guys in the tier? You know, that's when you start to really get into the details of it. But just in a vacuum, I would probably say stick and pick if he's the last guy in that offensive tackle tier.
All right. Pretty good chance he's at the intersection of need and value. There's another guy I have a little bit higher who I think could be too. We'll move on. My number nine guy is Jordan Morgan of Arizona. And he is the guy in my top 10 that I believe will not stick at tackle.
That's actually my next guy too. He's my eight.
You got eight. So we flipped our nines and eight. So 6'5", 3'11", 32, a little under 33 inch arms, 32 and 7/8", 504, 40. That's plenty of good feet for a tackle in this day and age. 23 in August, so he's a couple of years older than Suamataia. Measurables are all good except for length. And all of his career snaps have been at left tackle, so he's pretty much as polished as he's going to get at that position, I think. And at age 23, there are some things to like, but he doesn't really have an outstanding anchor. He's definitely a die slowly guy. He's the main die slowly guy, by the way, in this draft. There might be one other, but Morgan is the main die slowly guy on the left side. Most of these other guys are just so mammoth, man. They don't get pushed back at all. They're not impacted by a bull rush. Morgan does. He's a little bit small framed at 6'5", 3'11". He's more like a Rosengarten in terms of being a smallish frame guy than probably anybody else. Moving him to guard, I would think, is even kind of a difficult projection for me. But then I really liked him a lot more when I saw him on tape and when I saw what he did in particular in that game against UCLA, where they have three pass rushers. They have the Murphy brothers and Latu, who can all rush the quarterback. And he was pretty effective in that game, I thought. Had a nice 12-6 block, one on Latu, one on Murphy, Gabriel Murphy, I believe. Get some good latch snaps on Carl Jones, who's the fourth pass rusher for UCLA. Definitely saw him giving ground to maintain that mirror, as I talked about. Was beaten quickly on an inside move by Latu, which I don't really blame him too much. Latu is just incredibly polished and incredibly dangerous as a pass rusher right now. That Euro step was a quick pressure where he never even touched him. So it'll happen. I'm sure if got to the pro level, he'd face other guys as polished as Latu, who would give him trouble as well. I think he's probably got the feet to play left guard and be a good puller. I don't want the Ravens drafting a left tackle and then turning him into a left guard. That would be that'd be one of the worst wastes of an opportunity if they did that. And so Morgan is one of the guys who's kind of a no for me, the Ravens at 30, even if they traded down to, you know, 40 or so. I probably still would not want him. If he's on the board at 62, sure, I'll take him then. But if I really wouldn't want him as the first selection in the draft in lieu of a guy I'm sure has the characteristics to play left tackle.
Yeah, I was a fan of Jordan Morgan's too. I mean, he's eighth on my list. So, you know, obviously I liked him a lot. Like you said, there's going to be those concerns where are they going to give him a chance to play on the left side? Well, at left tackle. and prove that he can't play it? Or is he going to be a guy that's going to be drafted and they're just going to say, no, you're a left guard? You know, and it's kind of where these rankings kind of, they kind of mess you up a little bit, because you don't know what the team that drafts them is going to do with their particular skill set. Look at Tyler Smith. Tyler Smith was a guy who was a left tackle. Everybody's, oh, he's going to be the left guard and then move out to left tackle. Now he's the left guard, and that's stamped because he's an all pro there. So you kind of have to look at those things through multiple lenses. And a guy like Jordan Morgan, do I want the Ravens to take him at 30? I'm not sure. Like, I don't really know. Like, I liked his tape. You know, I've seen him go up against upper echelon talent and do well and hold his own. But am I comfortable taking a guy who has a hard time redirecting and shifting his weight? Because to me, that's one of the things that I look for the most with offensive tackles. Are you able to recover? Because you're going to get beat in the NFL. Like, I don't care how good you are. Trent Williams gets beat. What separates the top offensive tackles against the average guys is the ability to basically redirect your weight and be able to recover. And with Jordan Morgan, to me, that was the thing that stuck out the most on tape, was his ability to recover after getting beat. His feet, he's a good linear athlete, but as far as movement wise, left to right, it was a little bit stuck in the mud for me. And I would probably have to lean towards no when it comes to 30, even though I was a fan of his tape.
Okay, outstanding. So a couple of players there we had in the reverse order. That's going to make this go a lot quicker, believe me. But why don't we move up then, since we both got our number eight guys covered. Go ahead and tell us who your number seven guy is.
So my number seven guy is a little controversial, but Graham Barton. I was a fan of his tape, you know, mainly against Jared Verse, who's most likely going to be a top 20 pick in this draft. When it comes to Graham Barton, similar size as Jordan Morgan, you know, and to me, it's like, okay, if you're going to have Jordan Morgan in the list, you got to have Graham Barton there too, because they're pretty much identical when it comes to physical size. Same arm length, pretty much same height, pretty much same weight. And for me, Graham Barton's movement skills are way better than Jordan Morgan's. I liked his ability to move. Now, I do think he's a guy that's obviously going to get drafted and play on the inside, because they're talking about moving him to center.
Right.
But speaking solely on talent and what he put on tape, I liked what he did. And he's one of the guys that you said, he's one of those slow burns. It's going to look ugly. It's not going to look pretty. It's not going to be a Trent Williams kind of rep, but he's going to lose slowly for you. But he's going to battle his ass off. And that's what I really liked his tape. And I was a fan of his. And I think he can stick in the at left tackle, but I do think his best spot will be on the inside.
Here's my issue. I want to go back to my notes on Barton to make sure I'm giving this exactly accurately. First of all, you're right about the general size of the player. 6'5", 313, 32 7/8 for Graham Barton. Not the length you want at left tackle. But it's not a matter just of that I don't think he'll work out at left tackle, but they're very similar, Morgan and Barton, in terms of having vertically well-distributed weight for tackle as opposed to for guard. Guards, you want a pear-shaped body. More than that, you want a lot of sand in the pads. You want thick glutes and thick thighs. But in his case, he's not that. But the way that everything's been described about him otherwise, in terms of being a high IQ player, a guy who's going to lead your offensive line, it makes tremendous sense for him. And I think he would clearly have more value at center. If Morgan doesn't make it at left tackle, he's got a big problem, because he might not make it at left guard either. So in his case, he's still my number nine left tackle on the list. And I think that's a fair representation of maybe not exactly where I'd want him, but, you know, exactly where I think his value is, ready to play this is right now. In the case of Barton, I think you build your whole offensive line around him. He's somebody's new Tyler Linderbaum if he moves to center. Is this a great draft if you want to get a center. If the Ravens are only short a center instead of their other positions, you know, they'd have an easy time, easy pickings with JPJ and the West Virginia guy, Frazier, and Graham Barton, and other guys who, you know, will move inside. The position is actually a little scarce, and DaCosta's glossing over it as being a no big deal, is guard. There just aren't a lot of big pear-shaped guards in this draft. And DaCosta's acting like all rounds, all positions are covered kind of thing. Well, if you want to talk about tackles who are moving inside, then I probably think you're right. If you're including Barton, you know, in that guard group, if you're including JPJ moving to guard, which I'd be happy doing if the Ravens somehow got him. Those are reasonable choices. But honestly, I think guard position is short. I think it really showed up in free agency with all the money that got thrown at guards.
Yeah, it was kind of ridiculous. When you look at some of the names or guys who, you know, talented, yeah, but you see guys getting paid like they're all-timers and they haven't even made a Pro Bowl or an All-Pro. And, you know, we know the Ravens are not going to go for that. You know, if they're going to throw money at somebody, it's going to be a Roquan Smith, someone who is proven in the league, someone who's done it before, not a projection for the future. When you see a guy like Robert Hunt getting all of that money coming off of a major injury. So, you know, it's ideally, yeah, you would like for them to throw money at the position. But when you kind of take a step back and you look at it, you realize why they didn't hand out one of those big contracts to some of those unproven guys when it comes to that level of money that they're going to be making.
The Ravens also have to decide where they're going to try and get by cheap this year. And, you know, they have a couple of receivers in-house. Receiver might be a position where they don't go out and spend a lot of money. Brandon Ayuk, obviously a trade for him is out there being circulated as if it's a really likely possibility of the Ravens. The Ravens are not getting Brandon Ayuk. They allowed Kevin Zeitler to walk. They allowed John Simpson to walk, which is a lot of 2024 cap dollars spent that the Ravens won't have to. And they've got two young guys that I think they're probably going to give both jobs away to. I don't think Josh Jones is going to play either position. If I had to guess right now, I think they'd rather have Jones as a tackle backup. And then I think that it will be Voorhees at left guard and Cleveland at right guard as we stand right now. Where are you on that?
Yeah, I agree with that. I think they're telling us exactly what they feel about Ben Cleveland because it's obviously it wasn't about money when it comes to Kevin Zeitler because his contract was pennies when you look at relatively to how guards were getting paid. So it wasn't a money thing. So they're the ones that see Ben Cleveland every day. They're the ones that see him in practice. And when he's been in the games, you know, he's been solid. You know, he hasn't been Marshall Yanda, but he's been solid. And what you want to see is that progression. And I think with their actions, what they're telling us is this guy's ready. He's ready to be on that Ben Powers plan where Ben Powers was that guy, you know, last year of the contract, same thing with Ben Cleveland. Now, last year of the contract, and now he's going to get his turn to take that right guard spot. I think they're telling us that with their actions.
It does really seem a shame that they didn't get more out of Ben Powers because he was available. And there did seem to be kind of a doghousing of Powers in year two that might have carried over into year three when he got married, showed up fat. They put his weight in there at 370 on the roster. You know they didn't like him when they're doing that. But anyway, if you look at the guy just physically, last year, last camp, last regular season, he's an Adonis now built top to bottom. In fact, he's even a little top heavy, I would say, in terms of how much mass and muscle. Yeah. So he's a big dude. But anyway, Voorhees, to me, that's where the Ravens are really going to get paid because they've identified him. They've got 4 years with him. If he turns out to be a starter and a good player as a rookie, that's four good years they're going to have out of a player there before they have to give him up. So very excited about how that pick has worked out. And hopefully that's a name we can lord over the Browns for the rest of our lives.
I hope so. Hopefully.
All right. Well, let's move on. So he was your number seven guy, right?
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
So we're up to my number seven guy, and that's Tyler Guyton. Down to my notes on him, make sure I'm giving you the right player.
Barton was my eight guy.
I thought we had the same eight guy and it was our each number nine guys, but that's okay. We'll fix it. So I had Suamataia at eight and you had him at nine, right?
Right. Yeah.
And I had Morgan at nine and you had Morgan at eight or you had
Morgan. There we go. Morgan at eight. Yeah. 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 And then Barton at seven.
Barton at seven. Okay. There we go. Okay, so Tyler Guyton, let's talk a little bit about him. Number 60 for Oklahoma. He is probably one of the best probabilities in my mind that the Ravens draft at number 30, even though Obviously, he's played some on the right side. He's only got 74 snaps of left tackle in his college career. 6'8", 322, 34 and an eighth inch arm. Seems like I'm talking like a repeater with these height and weight numbers here. Be 23 in June, so he's still fairly young for a tackle, plus athletic testing across the board. So, you know, good solid athlete. He's a very late convert. He converted from defensive end to offensive tackle in college. He had 2 years at TCU and then two at OU. Still very much learning the position. I don't think that shows as much as some of you other people say, but there are some things he's raw at. He's not a karate fighter in terms of his hand fighting. Placement is a question from time to time. He has some recognition issues, and we'll get to that in terms of an individual game I watched. And his pad level can be a little high, which means he's losing leverage, obviously. And those things, I think they're all correctable at the NFL level. Does stand up at the snap once in a while. It's kind of thing, by the way, that in particular, it's one of the first things they tell you in peewee football when you're learning to play offensive line is don't stand up right at the snap. Don't just back up three steps or back up a step and then stand right up. You know, you have to stay kind of, you know, a little bit of a crouch there to be ready to go and deliver a powerful blow to your opponent. So anyway, that's still going on a little bit here. When Orlando Brown got drafted, they talk about him crossing his feet. That's even a much bigger sin for a tackle to do. And NFL players, you know, will generally not allow you to get away with that. But it's something that, you know, if you're talking about the scale of potential ways in which a player cannot be ready for the NFL, honestly, standing up the snap is correctable, at least in Guyton's case. Did you want to respond to that before we move on?
No, like I agree with that. And obviously these guys are prospects, so they all have their flaws. But when you're looking at it, it's like, all right, how correctable are these flaws? And can we fix this? Is it an easy fix or is it something that isn't an easy fix? If you have a guy who can't move his feet, that's not an easy fix.
Right.
That's going to take years and years and years to correct if it even gets corrected. When it comes to hand placement, posture, being able to, you know, bend down in the right stance, all of that is correctable. And like we're going to bring him up again, Joe D, you know, you have confidence in a guy like Joe D who can make those corrections.
He's coming off a year where he could not fix the penalty problem that John Simpson had. In fact, John Simpson, by random chance, it could have almost not occurred, but his penalty rate was almost identical to what it had been during his 3 years at Las Vegas with the Raiders this last year. They tried psychological games to try and make him come to realization, take more responsibility for it, whatever it might have been. All I've ever heard about John Simpson is he's a very nice guy. In particular, I don't care whether you're a nice guy or kind of a jerk, you can still withdraw into yourself in terms of a lack of confidence in doing some particular job. And that's, I think, what the Ravens thought was the problem with Simpson and why they played him there and tried to dangle the Sala stick, you know, actually slap him in the rear end with the Sala stick is more like it, by installing Sala as the starting left guard in OTAs. We got to preseason, it was obvious Sala was not ready to play in the NFL, but they finally gave Simpson his chance again, and then they couldn't correct the penalty problem. He still was having the same issues he had at Las Vegas for those years. So sad to see him go, in the sense that he's a guy who you know, seemed to be a nice guy. He was okay in terms of a season, kind of a C-minus year for as I would score it. But it's one of the few black marks on Joe D's record, and maybe Harbaugh's as well, because I think the mind games are Harbaugh. In terms of not being able to get a guy out of his shell and not being able to correct what seemed like it might be a correctable problem.
Yeah, I agree. And I know Coach Evans, he's a guy who he's not a big fan of him. His nickname for him is John the Stallion, because he's always on the floor twerking like Megan the Stallion.
That might be a cultural reference I don't understand. But, I'm sure he can explain it to me. Watched a cut-up of the Oklahoma State game, and this was a difficult game for him with three pressures. So I look at that as PFF scored, and I think, oh, goody, we're going to see some mistakes here. I thought one of the things that really stood out was he has very good experience and decisiveness running counters. And we want that in tackle because you run the counter all the time here in Baltimore. And when you're the trailing player as a tackle, it takes an extra level of not getting your feet caught up because there could be traffic and you need to know how to negotiate that traffic, but also just decisiveness in terms of who you're going to block. Morgan Moses had it in spades. Ronnie Stanley is perfectly good at it. But a lot of tackles are not. And you know, you got to maintain your momentum. You got to decide who you're going to block kind of in advance, good vision of the field. I thought Tyler Guyton did have that, which was nice. He had four separate blocks he connected on as the trailer. Now, I mentioned that because in my scoring system, I'll give out a courtesy point if you run your track as a trailer, but there's no one for you to block. He found a block every single time and ran his track. So that was exceptional. I thought it was one of the real positive things. It's something I didn't expect to see. From Guyton. He was beaten by a Eurostep for a pressure by number one. I didn't look back to see who number one is for Oklahoma State, but the fact that he's wearing a single-digit number probably means he's a pretty good player. I just don't know who he is. He was bowled, then shed by number 30 for a quarterback hit. That didn't look good at all. That was a hand placement issue. 30 rolled right off, and that shouldn't have happened, but he did. Beaten inside for a third pressure after an unhelpful chip block from the tight end. So you see this every once in a while, but the tight end will, or even sometimes a running back, will chip a player to the inside and it'll actually free the pass rusher for an easy lane to the quarterback. That's what this one was. I don't blame him too much for that. PFF didn't score him for one of this, but he had a fourth pressure by Bull Rush to number 94, who was he's all the way in the cone. I don't know how you could not call it a pressure, but they obviously didn't in that particular case. Had a nice stunt handoff late in the game, but you definitely see some technical problems with Guyton in this game. You also see some unexpected technical successes in terms of the running the track on the counter plays. Great raw clay. Probably the best raw clay in the draft, along with Mims and Suamataia, in terms of what you could have in terms of upside on the player. I'm not 100% convinced that Guyton is going to move to the left side, but I won't rule it out after watching what I did.
Yeah, and we have Guyton ranked similarly because I'm right there with you as far as where he's ranked. With Guyton, you know, he's a guy, you mentioned it before, he was at TCU. He was a left tackle, played H-back for them as well, actually caught a touchdown in one of the mm-hmm. games. So he's a guy, obviously, physical freak. When you look at his testing numbers, you look at his body, you know, he has one of those weird builds where he's super big down low, like real bottom heavy. And then up top, he's like this slim guy's like it's a weird build, but it works for him. Obviously, you know, he's a guy who freakish athletic ability. But for me, when it came to his pass blocking, I thought he was a guy who initially was able to get his block, but maintaining the block was the issue for me. Having that power and that grip strength and being able to sustain those blocks, to me, that was one of the big issues that I saw with Tyler Guyton. And we talk about easy fixes, and I think that's a problem that can be fixed fairly easily. You can't teach what he has, but as far as the pass sets that Oklahoma has and the kind of offense that they run, is difficult to really get a good feel of how his game will translate to the NFL, because they run a real college system. A lot of RPOs, a lot of quick screens. There isn't a lot of just, you know, leaving them on an island and all right, you block this guy. It's like in a pro style offense. So making that jump and being able to make reads and have to decipher, oh, is the safety coming on a blitz? Oh, is the linebacker coming on a blitz? You don't really see that in where he plays football. They don't really play that sophisticated level of defense in that conference. So just being able to get him on that mental track, I think he's going to be a project. I don't think he's a guy who is going to get drafted in the first round. If he goes in the first round, I believe he will be. But I don't think he's a guy that he's just going to be able to plug and play right away from day one. I think he's going to be a bit of a project.
Okay, so completely agree on the project. Completely agree that he's right on the border of day one, day two in terms of being drafted. So the question I guess I have for you is, is he at the intersection of need and value streets for the Ravens at number 30?
He's another guy I struggle with him. I really do struggle with Guyton because these, I mean, physically, you know, there aren't many guys who are like him in the world, just physically. So can the Ravens take that chance of not drafting a guy with these physical capabilities that he has? I think if he's there, I do believe they take him, but I do think that fans should temper their expectations because just because he has that first round label doesn't mean that he's going to come in and be starter day one, that he's going to be ready to go. And I think we need to be careful with pick 30 because most of the people, like most teams, they probably only have like about maybe 15 to 20 first round graded players. So after that point, it's generally second round talent that we're looking at. So just because the player has the pick 30, I mean, round one next to their name on Wikipedia or when they're selected, not all first round picks are made the same. So just temper expectations.
It certainly is a big grade off in the first round. And you see that in most value charts and how they would look at it. And obviously, you know, we see the difference. Let me just give you a hypothetical situation. So Eric DaCosta and the rest of his scouting group has said, we're in a deadlock, Chris. I need a tie-breaking vote here. We've got four players up, and we've got Tyler Guyton of Oklahoma, Kingsley Suamataea of BYU, Jordan Morgan of Arizona, and Patrick Paul of Houston. Who are you taking at number 30? We're not trading the pick.
I'm taking Tyler Guyton. I think the athletic traits that he has, I think the arrow's pointing up too, because you don't want to put so much stock into the Senior Bowl, but I think you saw an incremental jump in his technique at the Senior Bowl where he was dealing with the top pass rushers that were there and, you know, winning most of his battles. It wasn't flawless, but you kind of see those little steps of improvement. And with a guy who's so raw at this position, that's what you want to see. You want to see those little steps and get every piece of evidence that you can that this guy's arrow is pointing up. And he has that kind of work ethic to put into his craft to get, even if it's just a little bit better from December to February when the Senior Bowl is going on. So I would take my chances on a guy like Tyler Guyton over those other players.
I would too. I think I would hope to get Patrick Paul at the end of the second round. I'd hope to get him at number 62, but I wouldn't take Morgan. And the only guy I have any kind of a qualm of regret about is Suamataea and letting him go, because I think he has a similar outstanding upside. And he's also, I think, a year and a half younger. So between those two things, it'd be a very difficult choice for me to make between those two.
Yeah, and I think they're similar. You know, two guys who are just scratching the surface of where they can be.
All right. Well, Chris, just fantastic getting a chance to talk to you about these tackle prospects. We're going to come back and do the rest of these 6-1 on the second part of the show. But Chris, tell folks where they can find your work online or communicate with you if they'd like to.
You can find me on the Deep Cover podcast. We mentioned it earlier with Michael Crawford, Kerry Stevenson. We're going to be doing a Ravens first round pick bracket show, like a March Madness style show where we get all a list of players and we kind of have them go head to head and we battle it out until we get a number one pick. And Coach Evans is going to be joining us on that. And also James Ogden is going to be joining us on that too. So two great guys. And I can't wait to go through the first round pick with those guys, because it's always fun every year.
Yeah, those are that group in its entirety is just outstanding that you're assembling for that kind of thing. James and Coach are great people and great people to talk football with.
Yes, sir.
Other folks out there, if you'd like to be on a film study short, hit me up. DMs are always open on Twitter. Topics open, Mike, pretty much until the start of camp. I'm looking for people who are passionate about something, want to talk about something Baltimore Ravens related with me. If you don't have a thought for topic you'd like to cover, then please hit me up with an individual player from Ravens history you'd like to discuss in the recollection series. I'm trying to be about 15 minutes, about three memories of the player. They could be whatever you like. In terms of that, we'll talk a little bit about what the player meant to Ravens history. And we're not looking for the very top players. We're not looking to discuss Ed Reed or Ray Lewis in this. We're looking to discuss guys in the mid-range. And if you could pick some that are way down there, that's great. One guy was the most brave. He took Laquan Williams. to even have three Laquan Williams memories is pretty impressive. But he did. He came up with some good stuff, and that was a lot of fun. Chris, thanks again for joining me. You're on mute, but he's saying thank you. And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you. With professional-grade industrial supplies, count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.